or yesterday, and now back again on Sunday. I want to get, before we get these live guests, I do want to get Eric Hamelbeck in, and I talked to Eric early, and we've been in contact during the week, because we're going to see him, and you'll get everything from the National HBPA Convention. Eric Hamelbeck joins us. Eric, good morning.
Steve, Jesus, I wish I was having as much fun as y'all are up there, Jim, with Christmas.
Well, you've got a convention to put on this week.
Hey, Eric, I just want you to know that on the record, for real, we had our group phone call, Zoom the other day with everybody, so we're on target, and we're not going on strike. We'll be there at the point in time.
Excellent. It's funny listening to y'all talk about that topic, and that very excited to have this as a panel. And Steve, thanks for being the moderator, but really lucky to have you, Rick, and David, and Andy from, you know, Toba there to talk about this. And ironically, the very first time I was ever asked to be a speaker on a panel was with Sal Sinatra in 2015, back when they still had the simulcasting conference. And this was essentially, or loosely, the topic was filling races. And I kind of jokingly made the comment, you know, fresh off of my time with Adina, it was difficult to get horses in, because I jokingly said, you know, the race conditions, you look at it and it's non-winners of two, unless you won on a Wednesday from the three hole and you were a chestnut, you know. And it's like, where do these conditions come from? So I'm super excited to have this panel. Very, very happy that we get to talk about, you know, something that looks like it could be positive and accentuate claiming races, but also really give owners new opportunities. So Rick, thank you very much for kind of spearheading this. I really appreciate you and Steve doing that.
Absolutely. No, it's these things that we talk about in the back room don't do any good unless we can get them out there and just, you know, especially
absolutely
talk right to the people that matter, and that's the horsemen in many cases. So, I do some stuff with Heista too, and I try to explain to them, you know, it's about communication. You have to bring the message to the people. You can't put, you know, here's a 30-page book. They're not. It's not going to be read. You got to go tell them. I always tell the story when I did my little internship as a professor down there at U of A, and one day I came in and I had the little hangman thing on the thing, and I had the blanks, and I go, great. And the word was communication, and it just applies everywhere. You just have to communicate to people, and so hopefully we can get some, you know, let them go all the way from what we're talking about here, and of course Andy and David and myself run the Graded Stakes Committee, and we can get all the way up to that level and explain a little bit how that's developed and how the races are looked at and voted on accordingly. So looking forward to that that'll be
great.
Actually, it's next week. So
looking forward to it. Very excited. And Steve, thanks for letting me come on to kind of highlight a few of the panels. Obviously, I'm very excited about all of it, but I'm going to quickly jump to Friday evening at the races for the first time ever. Of course, we don't normally do our conferences in the summer, but thanks to Stu and John, Stu Slagle and John Moss in Iowa, we are going to do a qualifying race for the Claiming Crown, which, of course, this year will be back at Churchill in November. We're going to do a Claiming Crown qualifying race for the Iron Horse, the Kent Sterling Memorial, that Friday evening, and working with Ben Huffman and the team at Churchill. The top three finishers are going to be able to qualify for that particular race at Churchill November 16th. So super excited that we get to do something like this, different, drawing some people in. I literally had emails, people teeing up to bring horses. It's always fun that you come to the conference with a horse trailer, and this is the opportunity. So I'm super excited about Prairie Meadows being willing to do this. We've even shipped over the saddle towels that'll have the Claiming Crown logo on it. I mean, Stu's just been great to work with, and the team at Prairie Meadows. So I'm, you know, we've got a silver platter to give away to the winner. So, I mean, I'm just over the moon excited about that part of the conference, but it's going to be really cool Friday evening.
So that what you're saying is, explain, so the winner of that race is going to get an automatic entrance into the corresponding race for the Claimant Crown.
That's correct, but not only the winner, and this was Ben's idea, the top three finishers. So again, if you want to make the trip all, let's say, quote unquote, all the way to Prairie Meadows, depending on where you are, it's not just the winner. So the top three finishers will get an automatic gate card to get in that day on the 16th. So while we'll just kind of recognize the winner, of course, but the top three finishers, Ben thinks that will be a wonderful addition to the Kent Sterling Memorial here at Churchill in November.
Nice.
That's great.
So we jump in pretty quick. Obviously, there's a lot going on with the litigation and HISA, but we have a very fluid topic, obviously, right up to, you know, what's happened recently. The conference will start off with a panel discussion, kind of a status report, a report from our viewpoint on HISA updates on the issues and the litigation. But also that day, we're very fortunate to have our keynote speaker, the Lieutenant Governor Adam Gregg, who's going to join us as the keynote speaker. As you guys well know, you know, we are very centric in the Midwest, and that's that agrarian-based as opposed maybe to the far coast on either side. But when you look at the agrarian importance of the economy in Iowa based around horse racing and Nebraska, you know, and Illinois and Indiana, Ohio, there's a little bit different tone, and it really strikes to the agrarian base. So Lieutenant Governor Gregg was very excited to talk about what is the economic impact on the state of Iowa based around horse racing and all the satellite industries that feed into it. So it's very exciting to have him there, and we're over the moon that he accepted. So, and then as you mentioned, of course, Rick, your panel moderated by Steve will finish that up on the first day. And then it moves into the second day on Thursday, the 25th. And I was glad, Steve, you actually, whether you intended to or not, certainly teed it up yesterday when you talked about fixed odds. We're going to have a panel on fixed odds, and we're also going to have a panel on CAW. The fixed odds panel, you know, I've been having fixed odds as a centerpiece panel, I think, since 2016. When we really started seeing that, my mission in understanding fixed odds was to make sure people understand when it came to the United States, it was different than the international market. It needed to be, you know, at least under the umbrella or have the same criteria rules as the Interstate Horse Racing Act. And so, you know, that's been our push. We've always had the mission of increasing handle for the organization and doing what's best to promote thoroughbred racing. And a lot of us do think that fixed odds is a new opportunity. So outside the state of New Jersey, which where it's kind of started, but it's done in a little bit different way, I'm very happy to have the group, Michelle Fisher from SIS, come in, Dan Hartman, who was with the state of Colorado when it was brought about and done through regulations as opposed to legislation, which made it a little bit easier. Kim Oliver, the president of the Colorado Horsemen's Association. And I really think that we've set up with that association a good template that's going to be utilizable as you go through the country and hopefully expand some fixed odds. So I'm very excited to really talk about that there. And, you know, how to make fixed odds work in horse racing is something that excites me. In CAW, obviously, that's kind of become a polarizing topic. we hear pros, we hear cons. I think a lot of people immediately kind of turn negative when you hear it. But there's also a business perspective, and that's what I talked to and actually really appreciated the Dan Ross article in TDN a month or so back, and, you know, actually maybe even longer than that now. But I reached out to him, and I said, dude, I'd love it if you moderated something. And obviously I'm friends with Pat Cummings, and he's always on, you know, that topic and following the symposium. You know, I initially kind of coordinated it with Pat to do something in the vein of making horsemen understand why it's important, especially when you're negotiating contracts. And then Dan's article came out. And then, of course, now my longtime friend Jack Jaworski, who was with the Stronach Group for many, many years, now with NYRA, but, of course, being part of the elite ownership group, he and Scott Jacoby talked. Scott Deruti talked, and so Jack's going to come out and also sit on that panel. So two great panels on Thursday. It's kind of a half day because we have our executive committee meeting, but, you know, really excited about those two for sure. And on Friday, we always typically kind of end, but not really this year, end the panels with our medication panel. Again, the Kent Sterling Memorial, who was just an icon within the RMTC and certainly within the National HBPA, working alongside Dr. Tom Tobin, Dr. Claire Finger, and many others. We're going to really be talking about our initial push filing the FTC rulemaking petition on no effect thresholds, really trying to make a stamp and understanding that this is a need for the industry, whether we have HISA or we don't. And I certainly have always been truthful in saying this was a soapbox well before HISA. You know, when you have the trainer responsibility rule, you know, we need to make sure we're doing the right thing. And I think doing this in the avenue that we're steering down makes a lot of sense. So I'm very happy. Dr. Finger, of course, Dr. Tobin, but also Dr. Rob Holland, who's on the HISA Furosemide Advisory Committee, is going to be there. But also Ron Moquette. We've asked Ron Moquette to be a part of this panel, mainly because he and I have been kicking around the initiative that I kind of started way back in 2019 when I did a presentation on what I called the Stewards Advisory and Recommendation Committee. We, Ron and I, have really discussed and now talked with an attorney who's been in the trenches about establishing kind of a checkoff list, essentially a how-to committee. What do you do when you get a violation notice? Because there are steps. It's different. The reality is it's different than what we had to do when the stewards got the violation from the commission. So that's going to be an integral part of the conference as well, and very happy that Ron's agreed to come on out to Prairie Meadows. I'm trying to get him to come in a horse trailer, but I'm not sure he's going to do that.
He may.
You know,
he may.
Eric, for listeners, you know, that notably for horse players and I would guess casual fans, as opposed to the stakeholders and horsemen who are understand and you know what the structure is. Explain the HBPA and what it is. What, you know, people, players particularly, hear references to, you know, horsemen's groups, and you know, they hear the lettering, whether it's THA or HBPA. And in fact, this even came up the other day when we had this Zoom meeting about who attends the HBPA convention, whether it's actual local trainers, or explain the makeup of the HBPA and the horsemen's organizations for people that, you know, are listening and really don't even know what the organization does.
Absolutely. And thanks for that, Steve. Horsemen's Benevolent and Protective Association. Of course, it used to be almost, you know, I always say California was the largest HBPA affiliate long before I was in this seat. Actually, I think maybe even when I was graduating college, they developed their own representative group in the TOC. Up until about 1993, California HBPA was, of course, the largest affiliate. But to understand any horseman's representative group, you must first not understand, but have an understanding of the Interstate Horse Racing Act. So, you know, the Interstate Horse Racing Act was developed and passed into federal law to help, I'll use the word control or govern on a federal level, simulcast wagering, interstate, so cross state lines, right? So I'm sitting in Lexington, Kentucky, and I want to bet on Saratoga. You have to have an agreement with the what I call the tripod of racing, the racing commission in both states, the horseman's representative in both states, and then ultimately the racetrack or the ownership of the track. So the horseman's representative really came about, and its importance was established because of the Interstate Horse Racing Act. So a simple definition that I'm just saying off the top of my head, a horseman's representative, whether it be HBPA or independent TOC or THA, that group has the negotiating rights of the owners and trainers in that jurisdiction. So you become a member when you get a license. Affiliates are very focused on trying to have signature cards and understanding who's a member and who's not. But the group, I always love to say this, HBPA as well as THA, we are the groups that are voted on democratically. You know, we are not an appointed, exalted club that folks get a lapel pin and say, yo, you're a member now. This representation group is actually voted on by the members. So I'll pick on Kentucky since I'm sitting here. Every 3 years, ballots go out. The membership is obviously developed through the racing licenses within the state. So whatever is issued by the Kentucky Racing Commission's ballots goes out, and essentially voting is done democratically, comes back, votes are counted, the board is established. Some affiliates elect the president from the board based off their bylaws. Some affiliates elect their president via a population vote. There's a little bit of variances there. Boards are essentially half and half, an owner and a trainer group. Usually it's at least 10 members, but there are some that have 12 members. So you have 6 trainers, 6 owners. And so that's the elected representation from the horsemen at that particular jurisdiction and the memberships of. But the key point here is the negotiation of the contracts. Now, having said all of that, the key word in HBPA is benevolence. And obviously, when you look at the affiliate level, anecdotally, I'm going to say 55 to 60% of what an affiliate does at a track on site is based around benevolence. But obviously, there's a lot more business side in protecting owners' rights, whether it's, you know, making sure that purse accounts are distributed fairly back to the owners. Again, we're protecting the owners. You know, and that goes back to some of the statements I've made about the litigation. I've tried to make sure we're protecting owners. That's all I'm trying to do. So when you're, you know, whether you're writing the $100,000 maiden races that are here, or you're just making sure that there's a certain percentage and not more than that going into stakes races, because we want to have the right amount being distributed to the horsemen that are racing there day to day. You know, so obviously there's variations in racetracks when it comes to source market fees, when you're dealing with ADWs based on, you know, quite frankly, the popularity of the jurisdiction, but even things as organic and granular as that also come from the negotiating table with the horsemen's representative group. So I hope that that's a pretty good explanation, but I do get that question a lot, Steve, and it's quite frankly surprising to me that there is sometimes that, you know, an understanding, or maybe you should say lack of understanding of what the representation is and how important it is. Because, you know, I've appreciated, quite frankly, Steve, some of the defenses you've given to me unsolicited. But, you know, there's people in the Twitterverse who talk about, you know, you need to represent everybody. Well, you know, what form of government represents everybody? And when you're elected, when you are elected, you can't represent everybody. You represent the majority. So when you have a board and the majority votes one way, or you have a membership whose elected board votes one way, it doesn't mean you're going to please everybody. You can't. I mean, look at something as big as a congressional race, right? They don't necessarily fit everybody's mold, but it's the majority. And if you're on the minority, you don't like it. But if you're in the majority, you like it. So, you know, that's the part that I think is the fairest way to make sure people understand what the National HBPA does in particular, or the THA. I mean, I can't speak for the THA, but, you know, they're now on one side and we're on the other. But that's because the majority wanted to go in one direction. So we're going in the direction that I think, in regards to litigation and ISA, to try to do the best we can to protect horses and protect horsemen. And if I could just take a liberty to say one thing, you know, I think a lot of us, including myself, get caught up in a win or loss, right? So think about our world. You know, I come from football, polo, horse racing. A win is a win. Right. And a lot of people are kind of focused on, well, you know, did you win or did you lose? I've tried very, very hard to, you know, at least qualify and say, look, you know, we went into this charge to make sure it was the best thing for horsemen. You can't look at it as a win or a lose. You know, you take a driver's test. We all take driver's tests. You can fail a test and still get things right. You don't have to get everything wrong to fail or everything right to pass. So when we're going through this process and we're trying to establish what's best for horsemen, best for the industry, in the opinion of the majority, then we are looking at it in a fashion that we can make sure as best we can, everything is correct. And at this point, if you look at it like a test, there are problems with HISA. Whether we can fix them or readdress them or come up with a new piece of legislation, you know, that's my charge. I'm trying to do the best I can to get everybody in the same place with uniformity, which is no different than what Ms. Lazarus wants to do. No different. You know, we both have extremely tough jobs, but at the end of the day, I don't necessarily see a ruling as a win or a loss. It's not about that. It's about proving what's best for the industry. And if you stop thinking about it in what is our normal reality, you hit the wire first, you won. You know, I grew up with the Marine mentality from my father long before Ricky Bobby. Second place is the first loser. That's not the right way to think of it, right? This is a test. HISA doesn't do everything wrong. We've advocated for things that HISA has been doing, especially when it comes to, you know, track evaluation and safety. But we want to make sure if everybody's kind of put into the same frame that it is all done correctly. So, you know, we are going to continue the process. We think it's what's best. I think it's what's best. There's no animosity on one side or the other, at least for me. You know, I'm trying to do what's best. I get a lot of criticism. I get a lot of hate mails. I mean, boy, you should have heard some of the voicemails on my phone on July 6th. Pretty disgusting shit. But, you know, that's a minority as far as I'm concerned. I'm going to keep doing my job, and hopefully we can all get along and get to a point where everybody is on the same page.
No, I'm glad. I thought that was a worthwhile opportunity to explain. And, you know, you made reference to the TOC, which is a unique structure, the THA, the Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, similar to an HBPA, and
yes,
you know, that the what dozen, how many what
seven
affiliates,
seven affiliates if I'm counting correctly, but yes, seven affiliates.
And how many on the HBPA side?
So in the United States we have 23, but I always give an asterisk. We still have two affiliates, Alabama and Michigan, that don't currently have live racing. But then we also have HBPA affiliates in each province as well in Canada. Yeah. So 28 total. Yeah.
So the majority of horsemen, actually that's an interesting question, and I know it's come up before. Either you have answered it or Alan Foreman has. What percentage of owner / trainer are represented by each organization?
Well, the reality is there are owners who are represented by both.
That's true. That's true.
Depending on which, you know, especially when you look at the Mid-Atlantic in particular, you know, and the HBPA and the THA have four states that actually have an affiliate each. So you look at Illinois, Pennsylvania, Florida, and New York. Those four states have either an HBPA and a THA. So again, depending on where you run, that's why I made that little comment about we try to get cards signed. It doesn't mean you can't be a member, you know, a member at Delaware Park can't also be a member at, let's say, Colonial Downs, right? So there's crossover. You know, I try to measure it very closely. You know, we say approximately 30,000 members. And that honestly is derived from Racing Commission license material that we get to help send out the Horseman's Journal. Now, I've recently heard, or I should say seen, written approximately 20,000 for the THA. So that doesn't mean that there's not crossover with both. And certainly in the TOC, for us in particular, you know, we have a tremendous number of TOC members that also race in Washington, that race in Arizona, you know, that ship to Arkansas. So there is crossover there. So it's, I don't know that neither Alan or I, but he's been doing this a long time, could really give a differentiation of percentage of what is most, because a member can be in both camps. So that's why, let me go back to, that's why it's so important to vote. You know, when I get criticized a lot about, you know, what an affiliate in particular is doing or what National is doing, I simply say, why don't you run for the board, Mr. and Ms. Owner? You know, the way to effectively make change is to get on a board for a horseman's representative group, buy a racetrack, or become a racing commissioner. You then become the triangle of power that is established under the Interstate Horse Racing Act. You know, you want to effectively change something, that's the way to do it. Now, all of that is, you know, still us dealing with the powers that are under the Horse Racing Integrity Safety Authority now. But, you know, but the real triangle of power comes within that set. You know, that's what I typically try to rebut criticism with, is you're more than welcome to run for a board seat on any affiliate, whether it be HBPA or THA, and then you can make effective change on the local level that can then expand to the national level. That's really how you change things. Or if you're wealthy enough, just go buy a racetrack.
It is. Well, maybe that's the answer for Mike Rapoli.
Well, and I'm laughing because that's
right?
You know, I mean, what did Frank Stronach do?
Yeah.
What did Frank Stronach do? Right. So I'm sitting as the 28-year-old kid And I read in the TDN in Midway, Kentucky, that Frank Stronach just bought Santa Anita. Holy shit. Where did that come from? You know, I'm sitting there going, wow, that's power. That's power. You want to affect change in an industry? Buy a freaking racetrack. And that's what Frank Stronach did. And I'm proud to have been a part of that for so long. That triangle is the key. And hopefully people, maybe through this, even this broadcast, will have a little bit better understanding. I'm certainly not a teacher. But I'm glad for the opportunity to talk about it.
Eric Hamelbeck, Eric the Tiger, and the HBPA convention starts in earnest on Wednesday. We'll be there. We'll broadcast from the convention Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Hey, can I say one point, Steve?
Sure,
that
of course.
I just want to recognize Alan Poindexter.
Of course.
Alan is going to be recognized at the conference as the HBPA living legend. I want to give a lot of credit to Richard Rydell, the Kentucky Health and Welfare Fund director. He started several years ago an award system. You know how often we recognize people and the importance that they have in the industry after someone's passed away. Richard's train of thought, which I just applaud as a brilliant thing to do, was to start recognizing at the conferences a living legend. Last year, we did Don Stemmons in New Orleans. We've done Judge Bill Walmsley. And this year, being in Iowa, you know, that was a pretty unanimous vote to recognize someone as strong in the industry, both from a racing and breeding side, as Alan Poindexter. So John Moss, the executive director of the Iowa HBPA. Of course, Alan is a member of the board. We get to recognize him, and he's a friend, and his horse is boarded in Paris with my friend Tim Hamlin and his wife. And so it's just a wonderful recognition that I didn't want to remiss and not highlight Alan as well.
Nice. That is thoughtful. In fact, Hammer, you very famously, ideally, set off I would like to think of a trend when you came up with the Eddie Delahousse. Why are we not honoring these people while they're alive? Let them come present a trophy while they're on the right side of the loan.
Right. Exactly.
You know, 100%. You know, we got another thing right in this game where we put people in the Hall of Fame while they're still performing.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, not a lot of retirees in this game to begin with, but the thought that, you know, hey, after X amount of years, let's everybody know that, hey, this guy's a Hall of Famer. Let him continue in his craft. So I like that. I think they could do that in other sports at certain times. But anyway, I like that too.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to seeing you both. I really appreciate you taking the time to come out there. We're going to have fun, as always. That's what, I try to base it around education and fun.
I'm still having trouble convincing Gina, my wife, that DM doesn't mean Del Mar this year. It means Des Moines.
That's an honest mistake.
It was an honest mistake.
Well, I'm coming in from the West instead of via Des Moines. I had to fly into Omaha. I couldn't get to Des Moines.
I got to drive.
It's only 2 hours.
It's not bad. Yeah, no, I've driven that from ARCI meeting there. So, and Omaha's a cool town. I don't guess you'll be able to spend much time there, but what a neat place that is.
You can drive by the old Exarban.
I attended Exarban.
So did I.
Spring of 85. We got to go.
Fat Betty. That's like, if you ask Gina right now, what's the name of a horse that we cashed on in 1978 at Exarban, she'll get it immediately.
Fat Betty?
Fat Betty and the Lass.
I love it. Eric, I appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely.
To let the industry, let everybody know what's on the agenda. And, we always have an interesting mix of guests and our regular coverage while we're at the convention. This is a little later than usual, a little different, but
Different. We don't normally do them in the summer anymore, and we'll be back in Tampa at the end of February next year. This was really because of a lot of things going on, including our national officer election. But this is a one-off. We'll be back in that February, March range, in 2025. We'll be back in Tampa.
Excellent. Yeah. Eric Hamelback, we will talk. Everybody will hear from Eric next week.
Thank you, guys.
See you
soon.
There we go. There's Eric. Fat Betty, look at you.
Look at Oxarb. Look at this. Win.
Who trained?
I have no idea.
Well, isn't it on there?
Dale Moore. It was a she was a claimer, but
who was she by?
Night Counter, with a K. So I don't know, but all I know is Fat Betty brought it in for us. Isn't that funny?
Every so often that's a fun question, you know, to put out there. There's the good use of social media. Actually, would be, I see people where they say name a random. Baltimore Oriole or name a random Philadelphia Eagle.
Yeah.
And people, talk about their favorite player.
You don't want to hear my random Baltimore Oriole? Mike Cuellar.
That's not so random.
But it's not random, but you would think something else. I don't know why he just four with Dave McAnally and Jim Palmer and can't think of the other guy. Mike.
You had to say that, right?
Right.
Cuellar, Palmer.
Somebody will be texting
the year,
any minute.
The year of the bird. Don. It'll pop in my head. But that same question as a horse, though. And see what people come up with.
You mentioned a racetrack or something. It's amazing what comes.
The random horse that you cashed on that nobody knows.
Yeah.
We're supposed to see Derek Ryan any minute, and
he just called his son ran off with his truck, so I offered to come and get him. He said no, I'll be right back. So he'll be wandering in here pretty soon.
While we await, I mentioned, of course, that Woodbine has got the preview, essentially the King's Plate preview card. On Saturday came up very good. And, the Woodbine Oaks has turned into, as good a avenue toward the King's Plate as anything. And just glancing at this this bulky field, I mean, they got a big overflow group in here of 14. And kind of angling for some that people might have seen over the winter.
Good morning.
Ontario breds that angled back to Toronto after the winter, and I guess there's actually only one, and in fact it's Tom Amos. And speaking of Prairie Meadows, you've got a horse exiting. This is an Uncle Mo filly, bred by Anderson Farms, a $485,000 fall yearling, phasic fall yearling. This bay filly, Badia, that won the Black Cat Lacombe over the winter, then tried the Fantasy. That didn't go well. Tom put her away and brought her back in the Panthers at Prairie. And she finished third there behind the nice Shimmering Allure, who we just talked about. Badia, she's an Uncle Mo out of a Bernardini mare, and he's bringing her up to Woodbine to try the synthetic. Interesting. Amos has gotten very hot, if you haven't noticed. Kevin Attard, well represented here, Attard with Inundation for the Old Wellings, also an Anderson Farm bred. This is a collective filly. There's one for five on the synthetic. Josie Carroll, certainly, with Chiefswood. Got a Mendelssohn, Kin's Concerto, So we'll look at this tonight and get ready for tomorrow, and we'll certainly talk to Ron Gierkink, war painter for Attard as well, who looks solid, has come back as a three-year-old with a couple of allowance performances. And looking, let's take a look and see where some of the big names landed. And I'll tell you one, Cassie, I think, only has the one player in here. Lunch with Bernie for the Conrads. Manfred and Penny Conrad, a Bernardini filly coming out of the Fury. So a big 14-horse field. And then in the plate trial, looking up and down here, and similarly, small field, actually, 7-horse field, which is a little unusual. Certainly My Boy Prince, that Cassie told you last week, was getting ready, and there he is. He draws the 5-hole. My Boy Prince, the Cairo Prince, out of the Queenston win. Before that,
yes.
He won the King Corey, and you would think he goes favored. Attard with Jokestar. This is the old Wellings, a homebred of theirs, out of the Star Guitar Mare, Starmaline. Practical Joke colt. Here's Chiefswood as well. The Factor colt, Piper's Factor. So, plate trial, Woodbine Oaks, the Trillium as well, the mile and the 16th for the older fillies and mares. And the Cup, the Connacht Cup, which also drew a nice nice group. And
I'm on the backside, but it's a little early for Tom to be in. But when you come in, you can talk.
Should make a favorite out of this, I suppose. Julia Carey, maybe, with Flag of Honor. The Australian, perhaps, goes favored. Capture the Lion for Gary Barber and Cassie. Saratoga Flash, Safi Joseph. Going to stretch out the added furlong from the Highlander. So, terrific state card for Kings Plate Preview Day at Woodbine.
So you mentioned Tom Amos, and I'm always looking. Of course, he's in the top 20 all-time trainers in lieu of wins. And
Pat Dobson. Thanks to Glenn Spatz. Thanks, Glenn.
Well, we had to get somebody.
Pat, thank you.
So I just looked up Amos. He's 16th all time. He's got 4,150 wins, but he's 7 behind the 15th. So that's Gerald Bennett he's trying to catch. Of course, he's still winning races out there, but not bad. Top 20 all time for Tom Amos.
Amos has got. I don't think people realize unless you reiterate. You know.
Exactly. I remember looking at this actually a few years ago, and there's a half dozen names on there that you probably wouldn't pick out. You'd say top 50, but you wouldn't think. I wouldn't necessarily think. But now he's been winning races in bunches for a long, long time. So you got Mark Cassie's number 20, and he's won bunches, and he's going to win a bunch more. Speaking of announcements this week, Santa Anita put out their fall schedule. Of course, highlighted for the first time this year by the new California Crown Series, which features the upgrading money-wise of the Awesome Again from $300 to $1 million. The California Crown Stakes run on September 28th. The Eddie D, $750,000 this year. For older horses coming down the hill. The John Henry is up to $750 as well, the California Crown John Henry Turf Championship. So three races there. Headed to the Breeders' Cup for preps. Also on that day is the City of Hope Mile, the Unzip Me, and then basically some of the other stakes that are always run early in the meet is preps for the Breeders' Cup, which is in California again, once again at Del Mar. So anyone that a few guys take advantage of coming out, shipping early and running in the preps there and staying. And I was looking over some of the names, and I was happy to see that the Oakleaf Stakes, which was changed to the Chandelier Stakes, is now back to the Oakleaf Stake, which is kind of cool. The reason for all these changes was one time we were all told to come in and one day and said, change all the names. So we changed all the names, and some of them have filtered back into kind of what they were. So the Oak Leaf is one of those ones returning, so glad to see that. And that meet will run through, looks like Sunday, October 27th, and then they'll head down to Del Mar. And Del Mar, I think it works at Keeneland too, but Del Mar opens their meet with the Breeders' Cup. It's not like you get a chance to kind of do a whole lot beforehand. First weekend is Breeders' Cup down there, so that'll be interesting. And I think Breeders' Cup at Del Mar and Breeders' Cup at Keeneland, going in the first time we ran at both of those places, it was kind of like, oh boy, is this going to work down here? Because they're not quite as big as they were, and both have turned out to be just super venues for the event. And Del Mar in October and November is not the same as the summer. It doesn't mean it's still not great, because you can still actually go to the beach in that time of year. But looking forward to that. Actually, 2 years in a row, right? I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2 years in a row, and then we'll have the $64,000 question for. So what are we on? 24 and 25. So in 26, probably not Belmont, right? Because they're question mark on if everything's going to be done. But Keeneland put in a new, they'll paddock and all that stuff will be done by then, as would Churchill too. So you've got to think they're in the mix, right? I haven't heard anything. And then, of course, Santa Anita's always in the mix. So we'll see how that goes. And they're not too shy about announcing early either. So we might, I don't know when they do it. I don't think they have a plan, meeting the Breeders' Cup. But they do like to get their locations out soon. So maybe we'll hear shortly where that follow-up one is.
That's true. And they've, it's funny. They there's been several years where you would have thought it was already, you know, would have been announced. And it's taken.
And it's funny because I'm thinking out, did I miss something? Did they already announce it?
No, there was the return to Del Mar announcement was strangely long. It's funny. I always, whenever this comes up, I always think back to when Satish, you know, was on the Breeders' Cup small board, as they say, and he first broached the idea of the Breeders' Cup making a 10-year deal to be at Santa Anita. You remember this? This
of course,
conversation.
I was part of the conversation. Yeah.
And at first, I thought, geez, that's nuts. That takes away the spirit of the thing to move around and all that. But then when we went and we had those three in a row, right?
There was a two, a miss mid-year, and then there was a three-bagger.
Well, there was two, then two at Churchill, and then three.
Then three. So it was like, I think it was 9, 10, 11, 10, 11, 12, somewhere
and
in that
I,
mix.
I realized, you know what? There's a lot to be said for this. You're guaranteed the weather, unless there's a
fire.
The fire issue, the 1 year, or 2 years, two different times. But I started to understand the value of it. And you know, we can't be here also without talking about 2007, which was tragic.
You're talking about it,
it was here. This was the most frustrating thing. I sat at that desk all week, and we were a 4-7 show at the time. We didn't become first 10-1 and then 9-noon until 2010. And so I had all day basically to hang around, and I ended up helping the office with all the mayhem.
And the weather was beautiful.
It was gorgeous every single day, and I mean exquisite. 75, just perfect, light, warm breezes, and then suddenly Thursday it started to change, and then, of course, Friday and Saturday until the turf. When the horses were going out for the turf, I remember the sun finally breaking through. And it was like you creep. How could you befoul this event? And they worked so hard to be ready for it, and it would have been just unbelievable.
Is that the first? That was the first.
The first two-day event. Yeah,
yes.
Merrifield.
From Doug O'Neill.
Merrifield.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who we loved. It was, and so people constantly, they'd say, oh, it'll never be there again. Oh, what a mistake. No, it wasn't a mistake. It wasn't a mistake. It just, it was unlucky. And what else, you know, what else you're going to, there's been plenty of, how many derbies do we go to and either Oaks Day or Derby Day is inundated and awful.
No, that's, but you know, that 10-year deal was, they tell me, you know, like this close from happening. And like you, I was skeptical, but you know, when you think about it, you know, of all tracks that it was in the rotation at the time, that was the, I mean, Santa Anita can just, you know, when you can just open the doors and not really have to do a whole lot as far as to the facility. And like you said, oh, the Europeans are going to have to come further and all that. No, they, what they enjoy is they know what they're getting turf-wise. So they know what horses to bring. And so we found out that they really liked it. And anyway, it didn't happen. Those 3 years in a row were fun. It was a good run there for that. And of course, here he is, the elusive.
Better late than never.
Derek Ryan.
This is funny.
Order cleaning stalls for Gargan's horses to come in.
There we go. Yeah,
We're live. I said, yeah. Somebody ran off of your son ran off of his truck. I said, now we've heard excuses before not to come on, but that's a good new one. That's why I said I'll come over and get you. I said I'll come over and get you.
Take the dog home.
But now here's Derek. He was here.
Yeah, we should do
years ago.
Give him the headset if you would. I think it'll work out better. Yeah, there you go.
Oh, yeah,
right. That's it. And take the stick. Beautiful. There we go. You're giving me a complex. I'm sending you text after text. After the Woody Stevens, the owners were all excited. When are you getting Derek on? He said, I don't. I'm trying. I was doing my best.
I was hiding out.
Derek was obviously here when I was here years ago, and boy, we had a lot of fun. And I know we're all both still having a little fun like that, but no, we had a good 10 years here where it was a ball, and the racing was great, and everything was going on, and you know, I followed you. You do pretty much here in Tampa, right?
Tampa, New York.
Tampa, here. New York, here and there, and
Saratoga.
Still a little Saratoga, and I remember Musket Man. Well, Musket Man was after, but in the 2000s. But anyway, always great to see you have a good horse, and it was glad to see you go overseas, or not overseas. I guess you had to go overseas to get there at some point.
Couple of seas.
Saudis, yeah, and then come back and win the Woody Stevens, which was it's great.
Yeah, it was very good. A good experience.
The best part, in a lot of ways, I mean, not you mentioned Gargan and, obviously Dornick's win, but this team involved with this horse, Derek, they are such a great inspiration to, you know, fledgling owners and young, you know, people with inexperience in the game that never expect to be in a position like this.
This is true, especially with a Jersey bred. I mean, I'm not a big anyone. When I go to sales, they say, "Oh, we got a nice Jersey bred." I say, "No, I'm not interested in them. I'm no interest in them." So it's kind of weird.
Well, explain the. I mean, you and I we have talked about them, but I mean, explain how this, you know, how this all came together.
One of their friends, Paul Brazione, Eagle View Farm, was friendly with them, and they had it after buying one 2-year-old Jersey bred at the time, a horse called Counterfeit Currency. So
sure.
They sent him to me, and he did pretty good. Made maybe 200,000. He wins second time out, and win his condition, and they parlayed it into two nice 2-year-olds last year. And one of them was Bucumdano, and then the other one is a call. Two's a crowd who just ran in Saratoga the other day, and is going to run back next week, and it'll be pretty salty.
Nice. Two's a crowd. Nice. We'll watch. I love it. I love it. But this horse, he beats State Breds in his debut last summer in August. I mean, how much talent was displayed right away that, and you realized this is something more than a nice Jersey bred.
Well, you know what it is. I don't crank 2-year-olds to win first time out, but good horses
will just do it.
Win. Every 2-year-old I've had win first time out ended up being the greatest stakes winner. emergency status back in the day.
Wow.
He won the Jersey Derby and the World Appeal. Irish Jasper.
Sure.
Muscat Man. They were all greatest stakes winners. They were probably the only ones that win first.
And they won first out.
But they were good horses. So good horses, you know, if they're 60, 70% right, they'll get the job done. And you got to leave room for improvement. I mean, I don't crank them to win first time out. That's just not my style.
Hey, let me ask you a question, because this would be valuable. What is the difference between getting them, you know, that close and ready to run versus ready to win first out? And what are the elements of having them in a position where you know you're going to get as good a race as they're capable of at that time in their career arc?
Well, you got to have them in good shape just to run first time.
Fitness first.
Fitness-wise, they won't be 100%. Like, I run a two-year-old the other day, and I missed two works because of bad tracks. And I really liked him, but I knew I was a work short. And at the eight pole, it looked like he was home, and he got nailed by a horse who already had run second first time out. I know my horse is going to improve 15 lengths off that. I don't know about the others. I'll put it this way. I wouldn't be afraid to run back against the winner because I don't think he'll ever beat me again. But, you know, they're happy. I'm happy with second. And he'll come back. He's going to be a nice horse.
In terms of that fitness, when we hear, you know, paddock observations and they talk about, you know, tucked up and you know, just basically all muscled as opposed to, you know, a little layer that is going to come off with
time and training and as they get older. And nowadays, if you have a two-year-old that wins first time out, unless he's a really good horse, you really have very few options. You know, there's nowhere to go.
You know, we've talked about that because a lot of jurisdictions, they offer a stake. So you end up going in a stake because there really aren't two-year-old allowance races anymore.
Not anymore.
So you're forced to run in a stake. And if there's a couple of, you know, hot one, you know, in there, your horse is, you know, is not feeling so great because he just got blitzed, and that's part of the problem. There isn't that allowance program. Like, you 100%. We used to run these races at Santa Anita in March and April. It's like, okay, I won. Okay, now what? You got to wait 3 months to run back. So you'll see later and more and more trainers waiting later and later. And I think a lot of it is so they'll have a place to run when they do win.
Exactly. I mean, I'd have. When I had Muscat Man, and I knew he'd be very, very tough first time out. And a good friend of yours, Sal Sinatra, it was a allowance race in Philadelphia. And I said, Sal, I got a really nice horse. I said, but I don't want to run a no stake. Is there any chance you can try and hustle this for me? He says, he's really nice. I said, he's really nice. I says, if I make it back next year, I'll be in your PA Derby. And we made the race go. I think we had seven. He win it, and then he come back and win his next first-time stake, whereas that was in September, you can't, or October. That doesn't happen anymore, you know. And that's like with a mediocre horse running to fill a stake race for someone else and get killed. You're actually doing an injustice to your horse.
Of
you're
course.
Actually cheapening him up, and I don't think that's – I mean, it's part of the business.
That. I see that in some of these races. And then the worst thing that could happen is maybe you run third. Mm. So they, oh, we went third. Let's go. And then let's try a graded race now. And then, you know, four races later, your horse is just going, oh, what are you going to do to me next?
Exactly.
So that's one of the things that we need to look at bringing back or trying to get back in the programs is forget that $100,000 stake. Just make the allowance race. Let the good ones will go on and do their thing. But not everyone's a good one.
No, exactly. I
mean, the other ones need to take those little, the baby steps, the short stairs.
I've never thought to make this point. But it does seem, hearing that from you and thinking about Eddie Keneally and Ian Wilkes, Brian, I'm wondering if that philosophy and preference has ties to, you know, international origins and, you know, and programs and you know, a different style of programs that, you know, you may have been familiar with, you know, in terms of spoon feeding your young horse.
Well, I suppose certain guys are known for winning first time out, and that's their thing, and to each their own. But I mean, like I said, that's not my style. I don't, you know, if I have one that's good enough, they're going to win anyway. But to crank one up, just do everything you can to win. And a lot of guys, that's all they do, which is fine. That's their way. I mean, but I want them to last. I don't want them to be a 2-year-old and maybe barely around 3. I want them to be around at 4 or 5. I mean, my plan is to get this horse back to Saudi Arabia. That's the goal.
Well, if they're giving away with the kind of money that...
I'm not planning on going to the Breeders' Cup. I'm planning on going back to Saudi.
A lot
of people say that's crazy, but the two races at the Breeders' Cup, one's a 2-turn mile, one's 6. Both of them don't suit me.
No.
Didn't tell the owners that yet.
Well, they're going to hear about it now. Without fail, they'll hear about it. One thing I got to ask, I mean, and not to try to wet blanket this, source of Eddie Owens.
He's a nice horse.
Right?
Real nice horse.
And how crazy is it? How crazy is it that, you know, we get this kind of a matchup in this spot?
You know what? He's a nice horse, and he's a good horseman and deserves a shot. I'm glad to see him get it, whereas there's not too many people would have. And if I get beat, well, I hope it's Eddie that beats me.
I hear you. You also got the other.
I mean, he had that nice horse first time out last year, and he ran him into stake. And I didn't say nothing, but I said, you better be really nice if you think you're going to win this stake. And you know what? He runs second. 10 lengths clear of the third horse. If I was the horse that's running in the Haskell.
Yeah, the C-Streak.
He wins it if I wasn't around that year. So, I mean, you know, and he knows what he's doing. He's pretty sharp.
Yeah, that was the Smoke Blacken
last year. Me, personally, I don't run maidens in stakes. But, you know, he did run a big, big race.
Well, and that's become a thing. I mean, it's Rick, you and I have discussed this about the maidens, you know, guys saying, let's just go ahead and run. Now and skipping a condition, which seems a little silly.
Yeah, I would never do that, but like I said, to each their own.
I mean, as a 2-year-old, it's not
early in
not
the year,
that
uncommon. Just
it's
not that
right because you're running against horses, just paid
basically to run once, you know.
Yeah, one time. So, but as you're an older horse, it's not no. Croupy did that, not the horse Croupy, not Jimmy Croupy.
That's
the horse
right.
Croupy, didn't he run in a couple stakes in a maiden?
Yeah, it took him forever to break his maiden.
Yeah.
And I think he might have broken it in a stake.
He may have, but you don't see that too often.
Well, the most famous one to me is, I always bring it up, is Sheriff's with Hollywood Story. She ran in a maiden race in her debut, and then the rest of her career she never ran in anything but a graded stake, broke her maiden in the Hollywood Starlet. Ran in the Breeders' Cup as a maiden and finished 4th. Yeah, and that's Sheriff's. And he's not exactly a guy that's a meat grinder.
I mean, I don't know who the owner was, but maybe he had something to do. Was it George?
Kirkorian. Kirk, though, not George. Oh, I think okay. Kirkorian.
You see it a lot in California. You do see it a lot more because the fields are small. I mean, all the great, there's 2-year-old stakes there now, like grade ones. Everything is 4-horse field. I mean...
Hey, not everyone. Not all of them.
Well, I mean, I've seen a couple of them that are like 4-horse fields. Well, I mean, it is, but I'm sure they'll like drop some of them down to grade 2 because...
Actually, a couple of them have been dropped down, and a few of them around the country have because they haven't, you know, the last few years anyway, for sure. But so you want to go back to Saudi, huh? They like the Jersey breds over there.
Well, they
maybe the only one that's ever crossed the border.
They treat you very good over there. The track is unbelievable.
That's what I've heard.
Unbelievable track, and I mean it's basically everything is paid for. I mean your flights, your accommodation, they treat you great. And I turned down a job there over this horse.
Is that right?
Yeah, I was first out there a couple of weeks earlier. The same Prince Faisal, Jimmy Jerkins' boss. I was just with him in Saratoga this weekend. And at the last minute, I turned it down. I said, if I didn't have this horse, I would be taken. I wouldn't be here.
Really?
I said, but if I'm sitting in Riyadh watching someone else win a grade one, that might, I'd be going around kicking a lot of sand.
Well, and sure enough, I mean, you go ahead and you win that grade one. That was that was kind of the next question, because we didn't get a chance to talk since Woody Stevens. How much did it mean to you?
Well, at this stage of my career, really, it was, you know, good to get the job done. But I'm glad I did it rather than stay in Riyadh and kick sand and chase camels around the place with a stick or something.
So who come up with the name?
They're five local guys. They sort of like grew up together, and they came up with the name. And we have another two-year-old that they just bought. It was the sail topper in Timonium there a couple of weeks ago by Vicoma. And I think they're going to call him Falcon Eddie. Rich man, poor man.
I love it.
I like that.
So that's how they come up with these names.
Excellent. Well, they were so excited at Saratoga. And they said all the right things. You know, sometimes these horses find, you know, they end up with a group, and everybody, you know, they think that they did something, you know, that made it happen.
Yeah.
And
the main guy running the Jay Brizion, his brother is a horse dentist. Jay's grew up around here walking hots for John Tamaro Sr. when he was a kid.
Yeah. Love it.
So you know the game, and like, they've left me alone. I met him in October, November, and I said, listen, I want to go to Saudi Arabia. They were like scratching their head. What are you, nuts? But I said, the hell.
Where did you come up with that idea?
I knew that it was a mile race, because like when I was talking to those guys about going out there to work, and I knew there was a mile race, and I knew it was one turn. And I know that. I mean, I know my horse is a one-turn horse. Even after that race in Saratoga, Ira is like, thanks for not taking me off. He basically told me he didn't see the other horse coming.
That's what
and
I thought.
And the year before, he got fined, I don't know, $10,000, $20,000 because he hit a horse eight times.
Yes.
So he stopped at six. The guy who beat me, the Japanese guy, hit he's 11, and he got fined $20,000. But that doesn't do me any good.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Oh, that's quite a story. I didn't realize that.
Well, and because I said, I remember, I don't know who we were talking to afterward, probably Dick Powell, and it was obvious. When that happens, and there's a horse, two and a half, three paths out, your jock, a good jock will hear it coming and try to steer just so that your horse, because if your horse picks him up, he'll surge.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was only that much in.
Unbelievable.
And that's a real horse, too. Yeah. I mean, obviously,
he's got beat by.
Real horse.
That's what I'm saying.
Should have won the Derby.
You don't need to go there. But
he
should have. I don't want to.
Should have won the Derby.
I know. I wish he would have. Believe me. That's what I said. I didn't want to. Don't get me started on that.
If you watched the race in Saratoga the other day, that big infield screen. Ira's looking over this time, whereas we didn't have one in Saudi. If we had a giant screen there, you know,
different
you would
story.
Have.
Oh,
you
nice.
See those jocks in Saratoga, and they're always looking over if they're in front of that screen, if there's anyone coming.
Uh-huh. So. 100%. I love it. Well, I've been waiting for this and looking forward to it, because over the years, you know, we've talked a handful of times, and yeah, you're one of these horsemen that, you know, deserves swings at the fences with the best horses, you're not a guy out there banging the drum for yourself. So I'm happy to, you know, we can do it for you.
Yeah,
cheers,
great.
Appreciate it.
We'll have to go have a cold. And I texted Joe the other day. I said, "What are your hours now?" It's only open from 3 to 7.
3 to 7.
3 to 7 Thursday, Friday, Saturday. He says going to Saratoga on Sunday. So.
We met him in the paddock.
He got a couple days to get over to Boyle's Tavern.
Well, that's where I go and get my, I enter whatever, and I go, "Hey, Joey, can you print up the PPs for me?
Can you print out the PPs? Can you put the race on, please?"
He did.
Can you get a bet in for me? No problem.
We had a horse running in Penn National last week, first race on the grass. And he said, "Okay, come on over. I'll put it on the big screen." So yeah. I'd win. So hopefully he'll do the same. I got one in Colonial in the last race today. So
okay.
Well, give us here. Let me. I've got that close at hand. This is an allowance. lost my sock with Forrest Boyce.
Yeah. She's been a bit very unlucky since she broke her maiden. I mean, as a three-year-old, she was fourth in two stakes. And we tried to stretch her out this year. Didn't work. She's back in Virginia certified. And
can't beat that.
Obviously, you're not making the run.
Nah. Now we, a good friend of yours drove her down there, Patty Brennan.
Oh, really?
They got there at 5 o'clock this morning. So, Brittany Russell's assistant is taking care of everything
great.
For us. So, what a little look.
I haven't been down there since Ben Perkins ran a horse from here, and we went down there. That's a long time ago.
It's unbelievable turf course down there.
That's what they say.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Is it Woodbine style? Is it on the outside of the dirt?
No.
It's inside the dirt.
It's two big, huge ones inside.
Yeah.
Is that a mile and eighth
double
track?
Double wide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should also ask about Violet Smile tomorrow in the sixth, looking for the Ryan double.
She's MTO, you know.
Oh, okay. So don't have to worry about her.
I tried her on the turf, you know, Jersey bred. We're running out of time with him. We got another, 6 weeks. So you got to try and crack while you can.
What about on Haskell Day? You're in the 13th.
I had one. I ended up putting two in. I have a horse that I claimed, and he ran a big race the last time. Might be a little short for him, but if he gets enough pace up front, he'll come running.
That's late call?
Yeah. Yeah, he's a nice horse.
Very nice.
Got lucky. Claimed him off a local guy, but he's a nice horse. Got some pedigree.
He's a dialed in and gelding, so he'll be around, five-year-old. Was bred by Santulli. It's Colts neck. Look at you.
Real local affair. And Joe just got back to us. Said thanks for the shout out. So the loyal listener, Joe Boyle.
I love it. I love it.
Down at Monmouth Beach.
Derek, good luck tomorrow.
Cheers.
It's going to be fun. And then we'll see you for the Jerkins.
Hopefully.
Travers Day.
Hopefully.
Return to Saratoga. It's got to feel good to go back there. You know, would have been fine to win at Belmont or Aqueduct had they run the day there. But to go back to Saratoga knowing how he ran, you got to be – that's a real bonus.
Yeah, he's pretty cool horse. I mean, he's only run seven times. He's been at five different tracks.
And then, so he's got to have a mind then.
I got – you know, he mentioned the turf the other day, of course. And I mentioned our little Franklin Simpson Stakes down there at Kentucky Downs. Might be a spot for him too. So we welcome Jersey Breds there too.
Nashville is pretty good. That's
Nashville.
You like
good. I can see you with a guitar too. The winner gets a nice guitar. You know, I don't know who's signing him this year, but always a nice thing to take home.
Want to thank Derek Ryan and Eric Hamelbeck, Joe Clancy, Hammer, and I'll be back tomorrow. Big Twin Spires weekend preview from Monmouth Park. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
Summertime sun fall on the apple. Lord, there goes a Buick 49, black sheep of the angels riding down the line. We think there is a soul.